Hello, cyclocross friends, and thanks for tuning in to episode 196 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, we got Magali Rochette. If you had asked me, I'd say this is like the third or fourth time that Magali Rochette is going to be on Cyclocross Radio. Turns out, first time. Once again, we got a first-time guest that should have been like a repeat guest over and over again. But I guess it's great to finally have her here for the first time. She's in the pit with Michael and Zach and myself, and we're going to get to that as soon as I tell you about our sponsors for this episode, starting with Wattbike. Wattbike is a smart bike capable of connecting to the leading training and racing apps. It's basically the best indoor solution for all that indoor riding that we've been doing. I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. You have all of your bikes. You got your mountain bike, you got your cyclocross bike, your road bike. All of these have their own distinct capabilities. Your gravel bike, your track bike. So why are you going to use any of those for your indoor bike? You need something specifically made to ride indoors, and that is the Watt bike. Erg mode ensures the resistance automatically changes based on the training you're doing. Just as if you are out on the road, and speaking about being out on the road, the Wattbike Atom, which is their newest model, has real ride feel technology. It's the closest feeling to riding on the road. And on top of that, you got analytics. You got polar view and pedal effectiveness score. They're proprietary measurements that analyze pedal stroke in real time. So small efficiencies in each pedal stroke that can amount to big gains on the road. You can fix all these things. You can see what you're doing wrong. You can get better, and then you can go crush everybody once we're out and racing outside once again. Go to wattbike.com/US. That's wattbike.com/US. Check it out. Click on the link. It's down there in the show notes. Today's episode also brought to you by the Tough 20. This is the virtual race challenge of the Mammoth Tough, brought to you by Amanda Nauman and David Sheik. But before I get into this, something's happening pretty awesome with Amanda Nauman right now. If you're downloading this the day it comes out, she is getting ready to take on the Caldera 500. This is a solo 500-mile mountain bike challenge that takes place in Mammoth, in and around Mammoth, and you can track her progress. So you should go and do that. Go to trackleaders.com and you'll see the link there for the Caldera 150, 250, 500. Just click on that. Amanda's name will be under there and we can all cheer along as she makes her way through this insane challenge. But speaking of less insane challenges, there's the Tough 20 virtual challenge, which you can learn more about at mammothtough.com/challenge-tough-20. Just go to mammothtough.com. You'll get all the information there. Link also will be in the show notes. By registering, not only do you get to take place in all of the cool challenges that they have, but you also get a bandana, you get a pair of socks, and you get entered into a raffle for a new Niner bike. It's pretty freaking cool. You can put in your gravel reports and Amanda and Dave will check all of those out. You can do the scavenger hunt. You can go out there and like crush elevation if you want to do that as well. It's pretty darn neat. I'm going to be partaking in it as well. And I want you to, and to make it easier and more incentive for you to do it, you can get 10% off because you listen to this show and the Wide Angle Podium by going to mammothtough.com. registering and entering Tough 10, that's TUFF10, you'll get 10% off of the registration fee, and then you can take part in this great challenge. Finally, go to wideanglepodium.com, check out all of the shows, rate and review, subscribe to this one, tell your friends, leave a review, and become a member of the network. We'd love to have your support to be part of the community. It's the best independent cycling media out there, and we want you in the family. WideAnglePodium.com. All right, we're talking to Magali Rochette. She's the multi-time Canadian national championship in cyclocross. She's the current Pan Am champion. She was the first leader of the 2019-2020 UCI World Cup. And we're talking to her in the media pit. It's episode 196, and we're doing it right now. Hey, welcome to the show. Welcome to the media pit.
Thank you. I've never been on your podcast before. I'm excited. Thank you for having me.
I know. And it's funny because one of the things that all of this forced time off has done for me is to realize the people that I speak to a lot that have never actually been on the show. So I'm glad that you're finally here. It only took 5 years of this podcast to get you on.
That's, and we've had good conversations.
Yeah.
Just never recorded. So
true.
It's fun to have it to record it this time.
Absolutely.
And with two more friends.
Yeah, and we get Zach and Michael along too.
Yeah,
even better.
I'm shocked to hear, Bill, that this is your first podcast with Magalie. Also, I'm incredibly honored to be on the very first Magalie Rochette NCX Radio podcast.
I don't know, Zach. Did you ever do one of the CXM podcasts with Magalie?
I'm not sure, but I know that we did regular, like, super long interviews, like, several times. It was, like, a semi-annual occurrence because you were winning all the things. I mean, we talked at, like, every race I covered because you were always winning races, too, so.
Yeah, we talked a lot, but that's good. I enjoy talking with you guys. It's fun.
So, starting out with things that maybe aren't as fun Let's just back up. Before the world stopped in March, what was your initial plan for the winter and coming into the summer and then on into the cyclocross season?
Yeah, well, my initial plan got messed up pretty bad because I traveled, so my family has a vacation home in Arizona, in Tucson, Arizona. So on March 12th, I flew to Arizona thinking I would start training over there. And on March 12th, everything was pretty good in the morning at 5 a.m. when I flew. And then when I landed in Tucson, that's the day that Trump said that they would close the borders to everyone coming from Europe. The next day, they decided to close the borders between Canada and the U.S. And so initially, I thought I would be staying there. I thought, like, if I'm going to be stuck somewhere, I might as well be stuck in Tucson. And then we quickly realized we didn't have insurance if we stayed there. So, so basically I stayed one day in Tucson and then we drove 35 hours back to Canada. So that was the start of it. That was the start. And then my plan initially was to race some mountain bike and gravel events in the summer. A little bit of e-mountain bike as well. And then, cyclocross full-time. Focus was on cyclocross again. Then everything got kind of slowly canceled. And so, plan changed and keep changing every couple of weeks, actually.
Were you going to do any of the... Was there... I'm going to plead ignorance on it. Was there a full-on EMTB World Cup schedule? And was that something you were going to possibly travel for?
I was going to travel for some races. Yeah. I had actually a few e-mountain bike World Cups, but also a few e-enduro
events. Nice.
I had a fun trip plan in Europe actually with the gravel event in Iceland, two e-mountain bike events, but in like the coolest location in France, like pretty cool enduro races. And maybe some normal mountain bike events in there. So, yeah, that was a plan.
See, we could have
not anymore.
We could have done this. You, me, and Zach could have done this from Iceland together. Michael, you would have had a call in.
Oh, were you supposed to be there?
Yeah.
We were supposed to be there, yes.
Yeah. Well, 2021 maybe, huh? It looks like a pretty fun place to be, so.
Zach still has his voucher, so he's good to go.
Yeah, I still have a plane voucher, so like let's do it. We can do another one from the Rift in Iceland. So
yep.
So are you still riding the e-mountain bike? I mean, I think that was one of the exciting bits of news that we had from last year when we talked before the season. I know you had a silver at e-mountain bike world. So are you still riding that thing?
I do, yeah. I mean, when I had a race like on the schedule, I was riding it more, but it's still a really cool training tool. So I use it at least once a week. I use it sometimes on recovery day or like, you know, some day when you have a recovery day that you could take completely off. It's not rare that I just go out with the e-mountain bike and have fun, or I use it as a second training ride. So if I do intervals in the morning, sometimes I'll go for an easy spin in the afternoon, but instead of just doing a spin, I take it on the trail and then I can still work on skills. So yeah, I still use it quite a lot.
What is it? What got you into the e-mountain bike? I'm curious about that.
Specialized got me into it, honestly. Initially, that was them asking if I'd be interested in doing the first e-mountain bike worlds. And I like a new challenge and I'm pretty open-minded on like, I think from each discipline you can learn something. And so I thought, I'll try it out and who knows, like I'm sure there's something that I can learn and improve and bring to other discipline. So they got me a bike and I started training on it and I thought it was awesome. And one thing is, I think I told Zach last year when we spoke, but it's a really, really good tool to work on your technique, like on technical skills and on your ability to focus for a long time. Because when you're riding trails with that thing, it goes so, so fast and you're really at your limit, like mentally at the limit of your mental ability to focus and to respond quickly to like how you ride technically. So initially I had to take mental breaks. Like I had to stop just for my brain to kind of relax. But as I keep practicing, I can keep that focus for a longer period of time, which really helps for like even intervals or race situation. So yeah, so that's how I got into it. But as soon as I got into it, I kind of realized how valuable it was. And it's also really, really fun. So it's, that was also a big factor. Like you feel like you're on a motocross. It's just really cool.
Looking back, last season, great cyclocross season for you. Just out of the gates, just gangbusters. I mean, couldn't really ask for a better season. I'm sure when you're looking at it, you're like, well, maybe second World Cup, whatever. But I mean, pretty much sweeping U.S. UCI races, doing really, really well. I know every season that you sort of go back and look at what your strengths were, what your weaknesses were, what you are looking to improve coming into this year. So having that success, having that World Cup success, you know, which is a step up from you from the year before that, what was it, and even still, what is it that you are looking to really improve on and really to build on going into this season? What part of your game do you think you needed to bring up to even be better once you got to Europe and into that competition?
That's a really good question, and something that I ask myself a lot, especially these days. I think like physically you can always improve a little bit, but I don't think for me personally this is the place where I can gain the most. Maybe I'll gain 1% here or there, but I think technically there are a few things that I can work on. Sand being one of those for sure. But also, I think mentally there are things that, and it's funny, like you always want to work on what you're good at. And so for me, like working hard and big hours on the bike, like I love that. I would do that all the time. And even technical stuff, I love practicing. But then like for me, it's looking at myself and really realizing what I struggle with. And I realized that maybe I struggle at, I don't want to say being under pressure, but sometimes I fear failing, if that makes sense. And so that's something that I really want to work on, because I don't often take risks. Sometimes I will if I feel like super confident or super good, but I don't take enough risks, I think. And if I took more risks, like it's a double-edged sword. Like, there is more chances of failing, but there is also more chances of having a breakthrough performance. So that's something that I really want to work on. Like, those mental kind of, yeah, those mental aspects, I guess, is, I think, where I can gain the most. And, yeah, so it's weird because there's no racing now, so it's kind of harder to work on, but I think there's ways to work on it still. And I'm lucky that David is training with me a lot, and he knows, so he often puts me, like, if it's the last interval, he will, like, not necessarily the last, but usually we do intervals, and he's often doing them on my wheel so he can, like, look at what I'm doing well and not. And he just attacks me all the time, and sometimes I hate it because I'm already at my limit, and he's just sitting on my wheel, and then he keeps attacking me. But I know, like, for me, this is a way to practice that thing that I need to work on. So, yeah, so that, I think that's probably the one biggest thing. And in Europe, especially, I think sometimes you need to take a risk and put yourself at the front and try something.
Looking at how the U.S. season goes sometimes, especially, you know, again, I think the weird thing that North American riders have that's different from Europe, Europeans come over for those first couple of World Cups, or did in the past, who knows what it's going to look like in the future, and they were like, whatever, you know, we're going to train up for as much as we can, but it's definitely not their priority, where I think a lot of the North American riders are looking like, this is the A race, you know, this is the these are the two weekends we want to crush, and they come so early in the season that then it's like, after that, you know, the race, the competition level, just because the rest of the world goes home, sort of goes down a little bit. So have you ever thought about maybe foregoing some of the North American season and starting a European campaign earlier?
I've thought about it for sure. Where it's like a hard decision is that I have a lot of sponsors and partners that are North American. And so there's value in being in North America. For them, there's also value in being in Europe, but I think it's important for me to be present in both scenes. So that's one thing that I always consider, because, I mean, the reason that I can do that is because of those people that are supporting me. And if I didn't have them, it wouldn't be sustainable for me to keep, like, trying to be my best. And so that's something, it's a factor I really need to take into consideration. Other thing is, I really love the North American scene. Like, for me, it's fun. I just love it when we get there on a Friday night and everyone's there and pre-riding, and it's just like a cool vibe and you're happy to see everyone. So I really love that. And for me, that's part of cyclocross for me. I couldn't really see myself not being a part of that at all.
Yeah. I think that's something that a lot of us are struggling with, just what, yeah. Even from our side of it, even covering it and even like promoting races, is like, what do we want the sport to be? And is it, you know, it's that whole debate, is North American cyclocross really the same as even the mm-hmm. same sport? They're almost like,
yeah, totally,
know, separate things. And just,
yeah, but, and you know, for me, like, those races, even if the level of competition is not as high as in Europe, it just gives me energy. Just being there and having some good battles, and it's cool. It really gives me, yeah, energy that I can bring over to Europe and just, like, feel confident and feel excited about the sport and excited about racing. So it's really valuable for me.
Yeah, and on the women's side, really a bit of a renaissance too, just in the strength of fields. And I think we even see it coming up with both the Canadian and the U.S., you know, U23 mm-hmm. and junior women racers that are going to be, you know, nipping at your heels pretty fast there.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Well, I was going to go a little bit of a different direction. I feel like we've had this talk every year for the past few years, but I would say that last year, I mean, you were on another level. I think that I just remember, you know, at Rochester on the first day, I think you were ahead by like 20 seconds on the first lap. And I was just like, holy shit. Like, honestly, like, ran into Bill or whatever and was just like, wow, like, this is, you were just on another level. Like, does that change your, you know, your ongoing perspective on Europe and, you know, having success there and kind of turning your head towards wanting, you know, because like we've had Becca on and she's talked about how, you know, like for a lot of North American women, like your eyes are set on that and like having success there. So, you know, given this last season and you got your World Cup and everything like that, has that changed your perspective at all?
Yes and no. Sometimes I wonder, like, am I coming in too hot to and then start being tired when it's time to go in Europe and like when people are really fired up over there? So that's something that we try to tweak every year in the training. Like last year, I really wanted to win the World Cup in Iowa, and I also wanted to win the one in Waterloo, which I didn't do. But so the fact that those races were so early and they were like my target, I wanted to be like fired up for those. If we didn't have those World Cups, I think I would still come in ready, but maybe not as fired up early in the season. And then maybe I would like target other races a little bit later in the season. And that would probably change the way the season happens. So, yeah, I mean, definitely if we didn't have those September World Cups, maybe I wouldn't arrive as ready. I'd be ready, but maybe just not like top notch, like 100% ready to kill everything in September. Maybe I'd keep a little bit for later. So yeah, I mean, and that's something I would like to try. I mean, now I think one of my goals is to be on a podium of a World Cup in Europe. I've never done that. I've been sixth, I've been fifth, but I've never been on a World Cup podium or World Cup win. So yeah, that's a goal, and I would have to target my training accordingly, which we plan to do. I mean, maybe this year, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, well, let's talk about, like, you know, with coronavirus, obviously we're not having the World Cups in the States. I mean, have you changed that training plan this summer once it kind of became clear that the domestic season was being pushed back? Are you going to try and maybe work it where you come in hotter into Europe?
Yeah, totally. We've been super safe with the training. So we've been holding back a lot this summer. Luckily David was there, because by myself, like, I would probably have gone like full on since March, but he's smart. He's much smarter than me. And he sees the long game, you know? And so we've started super easy. I was just riding for fun. I've been running a lot actually this spring. And then we kind of started being a little bit more structured, but honestly, only since July, I've been more structured in the training. And only since July, we've started doing more intervals. And now we're like into it. But still, I mean, it's November. November is a long time ago and a long time away. So you kind of want to be ready, but I don't want to be full gas in September and then be burnt out by December. So yes, maybe that's like, I see this year as an opportunity to arrive in Europe with my full tank of energy, like completely full, because it's early in the season, but also full tank of fitness and hopefully be like super ready. So I'm excited. I mean, I don't want to say I'm excited. I am, but I just don't know if it will happen. So like, who knows? But yeah, I would love the opportunity to try this. So hopefully we have a season.
Have they made a decision on Canadian nationals yet?
No, they canceled all nationals, but not cyclocross yet. Okay, so
same as US. I don't know. Because that's mm-hmm. the thing when we've been talking to these US-based riders who really are looking at Europe as the place they're going to be competing this mm-hmm. year. I mean, we still have, what are we down to, 4 UCI events that are still on the schedule 4. In North America?
Yeah.
Plus US and Canadian nationals. Does that... Well, I guess yours is pretty early, though. So you would, if they still had it, would you go to nationals and then go to Europe, or just?
Depends on the traveling restrictions, but I don't think I could make both happen. Mm-hmm. I think Canadian nationals are November 20-something, so same weekend as Coxsackie World Cup. So, yeah, they're later than normal. So if... I don't know. I think I'm going to have to make the choice like World Cup season. Well, like basically the choice is World Cup overall or nationals. Because I think you can still do nationals and do a few World Cups and have a good season in Europe. But I kind of want to see where I could end up in the World Cup overall if I do all the races that are there. So I don't know. My choice is not made yet. Who knows if I'll even have to make a choice. But yeah, that it's kind of a tricky situation.
Yeah, for sure. And then also, the, I guess this sort of, I mean, kind of looking at the glass half full on this, it also gives you the opportunity. I mean, most of the time, I mean, granted, like you were saying, you know, starting racing in late August and ending at Worlds, it seems like you've always kind of stopped at Worlds, or at least did last year. This sort of gives you the opportunity starting later to get into those races post Worlds, which are usually pretty wide open. It seems like everybody's goals are kind of done, and then it's just, you know, just a free for all in those races. So it'd be cool to see you mixing it up in those as well, assuming they happen.
Yeah, no, that could be super fun. I mean, it's fun when you get to do new races. For me, that's one of the things that I feel are motivating, when you get to a new venue and it's a new course, and it just keeps the excitement coming and keeps it fresh. Like I think that would be super fun.
And is the more running just because, or is that more a European based thing? Because it seems like, especially last season, it seemed like there were a lot of running races out there.
Yeah. I mean, it's a double purpose, but mostly for fun. When I was in the spring here, it was kind of miserable, the temperature outside. We still had snow, but not enough to ski. And it was like pretty cold to ride. And they were not encouraging people to go ride outside. I would still go sometimes, like kind of justifying the fact that it's my job. But running was easy. So like I ran a lot. It was fun. It's fun to run in the snow. It's fun to run when it's cold outside, but it's not as fun the training, we didn't really have to do that much training because we knew like things would be canceled. So it didn't feel like going to ride 4 hours in -5 degrees. But running sounded fun. So I just did a lot of that.
Megaly, I was watching the Jingle Cross video actually from last year. Great race. You might have been there, heard about it.
Yeah.
Do you still have the hill? Do you still have the fake Mount Crumpet that you run? Was that part of your training?
Yep, I still run up it a few times a week. In the spring, I wasn't bothering climbing up the mountain many times. I was just like running for fun, but now it's part of the training again. Yeah.
Are you the kind of person we always talk about with podcasts about how we don't go back and usually listen to ourselves? Like, have you gone back and watched that race?
I've watched it because I did something with Flow Bikes with Molly Herford that I had to watch the race and comment on what was happening in my head at each moment. So it was pretty fun to do that. And that was only a few days after the race, actually. So since then, I don't think I've watched it again. I've seen clips of like the finish when I'm crying and I'm saying some stuff. I've seen that, but yeah, that's fine. You know, it's just funny. It brings back good memories. It was a pretty good day. So it's fun to watch back, but I haven't watched the whole race again.
I think that watching you, I mean, like, I think it's okay to celebrate the things that we do, and that was quite an achievement. But that that makes me wonder, do cyclocross racers go back and watch the quote unquote game tape to like study the things they did, the moves they maybe missed? Is that something you do?
I do. Yeah. I try to do it like when I'm doing like an easy spin inside when it's crappy out. Like I try to watch a race and learn from like what I did wrong and what other people did so well that I could learn from sometimes. So yeah, I try to do that. And even like, I even do it with interviews. I hate that. Like that's the worst thing ever, but I try to listen to myself because I want to get better. And especially English is not my first language. So sometimes like I'll say things and I'm like, oh my God, that's so bad. Or like I used to talk super, super quickly when I did interviews and that's not good. So I had to like watch it to learn, you know? So it's not fun, but you have to do it, I think.
You keep saying this, and you were always one of my favorite people to interview. I mean, I think that you're super insightful, and you know, Bill, in like the third question threw like one of the tough ones at you, and you're just always very open and willing. So I don't know. I always felt that you're being hard on yourself. I'm gonna say it. I say this every time.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, but I just want to get better. I'm not too hard. Like I'm not. I don't.
No, yeah. That's fair.
Yeah, I was trying to think, when is the first time I ever heard of Magali Rochette? And it was Behind the Barriers at, I guess, the second or third season. And I was remembering you then. And then I just kind of thinking about, like, just seeing you post-race interviews and just your career take off. And I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, that's one of the great things about sort of cyclocross racing, at least in the States, being so, like on the internet these days, is you can watch mm-hmm. athletes or careers really like the whole arc. And it's been really quite enjoyable. And to be able to like talk about it with them and sort of understand how things all changed and you know, where you came from and how you've grown. So I think that's cool. And I think listening to your interviews, I totally do it too, Magali. I listen to the podcasts we do and I'm like, I say sorta, kinda too many times. I need to stop that. So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. And you're right. Like it's so, well, thanks to you guys for doing what you do, because we wouldn't have all that great content without passionate folks like you guys. So thank you.
Well, we are all missing it for sure.
Yes.
Looking at last season, we've been talking about Jingle or the Iowa City World Cup as a highlight for you, which, you know, for us, we look at it and we go, well, obviously it is. You won, you know, your first World Cup and just huge race. But what, you know, where does that rank for you in that season? Was that sort of the highlight of the season for you? And also, you know, career-wise, where does that rank? Or what are we missing that you're looking at and going, actually, what's more memorable or more important to me is this race?
That's a good question, because I know sometimes like the obvious one is not the one that is for the person that the most important, but for me that was really big.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the highest, but another one that's big for me, and mostly because it opened my eyes to what was possible, was the World Championships in 2017. So I finished fifth in Luxembourg, and that was pretty big for me, mostly, yeah, as I said, it just opened my eyes to what was possible. I just realized that because I was like ranked on the last row, and eventually I like just kind of made my way up the front to the front of the race, like slowly, and then I finished fifth, and that's the moment I thought, like, okay, well, maybe there's something to do here. So that was a big one for me. But Iowa was very special.
Yeah.
Mostly because I had trained all summer with that specific race in mind, and it's like it's not the work of a summer, it's like a few years in the making, but that summer specifically I was like thinking about that race all the time. So when it actually happened was like pretty fun, pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And looking back at that Luxembourg race, I mean, the thing I would assume that you take away from that is that's a pretty technical in the sense of like those descents, and especially mm-hmm. you know, at that time you're full-time mountain biker right still, and yep. just sort of like implementing those skills, and it seemed like that was the beginning of putting together the cyclocross and the mountain bike skills together to sort of be able to take advantage of that and be at the front of races.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, it was just like a fun week in general, like yeah. I was with Eva and Katarina, and it was like pretty cool, and it was my first World Championships in cyclocross, so like all these elements together, and then I had a good result, and yeah, it was just like I knew I loved cyclocross, but then it was like I love it and maybe I can go somewhere with that, so that was cool.
That's when you caught the fever.
I had the fever before, but it kind of became like one notch higher that day.
Speaking of Katarina and oh my gosh, I'm blanking.
Eva.
Yeah, sorry. Do you and Katarina talk about that race, Jingle Cup? And you talk about, do you guys, I mean, because you guys are teammates, and I assume she was like sort of a mentor for you on Luna, right? And then Cliff. You win that race, and then the next World Cup, she wins. I mean, tell me about the conversations you guys had. Do you guys talk a lot about that?
Yes and no. We talked more about it when we were teammates. Not that we're like against each other now, but we just don't see each other as often. So we like to talk about normal life and not just about racing these days. But we used to room together a lot. And it was really special for me because she was really trying to help me out. And one of the example is that I remember one Jingle Cross. I think it was 2014 or something. It was a snowy edition of Jingle Cross. And from the start, we both got away. And I was pretty young. I was like 20 or 19 back then. And we both got away. And the whole race, she was telling me what to do. She's like, all right, follow my line here. Make sure you ride in the snow and do this and do that. And at some point I crashed and she waited for me. And then like I caught up and then she's, all right, this lap, we're going to go faster. And so that's one moment. It's just an example, but same thing. We did BC bike race against each other 1 year. And every day we were like back and forth for 7 days. And in the end, like she won by 12 seconds over 7 days of racing. But during that stage race, she was telling me after each stage, she said, you know, when you attack there, if you had kept a little bit longer, you would have dropped me. And if you had done that a little bit differently, you would have won. And so she has always shared that stuff with me, which is incredible because like there's no better feedback than from your competitor. And she was there like it's the best way to learn. And so she's always really helped me out, but she's also the one who's told me like, you know what, at some point you have to believe in yourself and you have to believe you can beat me. So she told me that. And at some point like that kind of started registering in my mind that it would be possible and that I had to stop just idolizing her and I could actually compete against her. So all these factors like made it even more special that when I won my first World Cup, she was like second. And then the week after she won. I don't think we've talked about it. We've talked about like helping each other at the races a lot. Like even when she was first in the World Cup overall and I was second or vice versa, we would pre-ride together and give each other advice. I think we're friend above competitors. And so we both see how we can help each other. And especially in Europe, like they're all together and we're kind of all by ourselves. So if we can team up, we're kind of, I don't know, it's easier. So,
well, it's even to the point that both of you all, even though you come under the, you know, names of Feedback Specialized and Cliff Pro Team, when it comes to cyclocross, it's just the two of you. And I can say, even if you weren't talking about race strategy or that kind of thing at races, normally the tents seem to all sort of congeal together into one. Like you could have still thought maybe you guys were on the same team sometimes.
Yeah, totally. And like we ask each other, like, what are you running for tires and for pressure? And how did you ride that corner or that one? And we do help each other. And sometimes even in the races, like if we're passing each other and we're both not winning, like might as well work together and help each other out, you know? So, of course, when we were first and second at the World Cup, I wanted to beat her. And I know she wants to beat me too, you know? So it's like really good competition. I think it's the best kind. Like, you want to help each other when you can, but you also want to win. So, yeah.
And that's, I think, a great mentor too, because even in that Jingle Cross race from years ago, I mean, knowing Katarina, she's going to help you, but at a certain point, she's not going to let you beat her. You know, that's kind of it. It's like, this goes for just a certain amount and then it's on.
Totally. And you're totally right. And that's one thing that she told me. Like I said, she told me that I had to believe in myself, that I could beat her. But that conversation also ended with her saying, but the one day you're going to beat me, you're going to have to earn it because I'm never going to let you win. So I love it that way. Like that's how you want to win. You don't want someone to give it to you. Yeah. So,
well, I asked her about that after Jingle Cross and she's like, No. That's not how this goes. I was not going to let her win, even though I knew how much it meant to her. I guess this is kind of more of a This is going to be more, I'll do my academic, this is a thing academics do, this is more of a comment than a question, but, you know, I've talked to you and I've talked to so many other people who have really benefited from these, either whether it be a mentor relationship or just that, you know, getting to play off one another and work with one another. And it seems like North American cyclocross, that's an area that we're just really hurting in terms of developing athletes. You know, I hear you talk about Katarina and remember you telling me that even when she was about to finish third at World, she was helping you, you know, with lines right before the race and stuff. And it just, you've seen it over and over. So yeah, I don't know. I always wish there's more ways to like get you guys together. But feeding off that with Jingle, it seems like you might have an American rival coming up. And I know I remember at Rochester watching you and Clara pre-ride together and sharing some laughs and stuff. You know, are you giving her a hard time and trying to get her to be your American rival? You guys are about the same age-ish.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I don't, and it's not like that. I don't like her because she's a really cool person. We just haven't really talked this summer, so we don't really talk outside of racing much. But I mean, we had some good battles last year, so I look forward to racing with her again. And just to complete the comment you were saying, like, yes, like it's true. And there's a lot of people like that who help out, like. Katie Compton's one of those too. Like, I'm not even American, but her and Mark have been helping us, David and I, a lot with just sharing their experience. And I'm lucky that I've benefited from that a lot, like from Katarina, from Katie Compton, from like just being on the Cliff team. Georgia was always sharing her experience and mindset and stuff that she was like working with me, Catherine Penderel as well. So I've been lucky to have access to these people from an early age, I think. Yeah.
On the other side of that, one thing that was able to see just in the time that I was around you all in Europe this year is that you are now in a position where you are the mentor for especially a lot of these Canadian athletes who are coming up. And you know, when you're racing with Team Canada, when you're at the World Cups and stuff, you don't have to be with them, you don't have to be in that group, it's, you know, you're still on your trade team, but you are, you know, and you and David spend a lot of time with them, and you pre-ride together, and you know, you have those great meetings that Scott runs where y'all are all, you know, sharing stuff, and that's, I think that's a great thing that I love to see. And I was really impressed with the way that the Canadian team went about that, and just the camaraderie and the mentorship that happens at all levels of racers.
Yeah, it's, I mean, those kids are super cool, and you see that they're passionate. Like, who would spend Christmas in Europe away from home if you don't like it? No one would do that. So it's pretty fun to see their dedication to the sport. And it's also, I mean, I know how fortunate I've been to learn from others, so I want to share, although only if they ask. Like, I'm not one to push on others, like to push my beliefs on others. Like, I don't want to do that. But if they ask, I love to share. And it also gives me energy. It's motivating for me too. So yeah, it's really cool what Scott's doing. And especially considering the fact that all of this Canadian cyclocross stuff is done under a volunteer base, it's pretty impressive. And I feel fortunate to be like, to be part of this group of Cyclocross Canada, because Cyclocross Canada used to be nothing.
Yeah.
But these last few years, it's been building. So it's pretty fun to see that.
Well, and it's people like you and I think Vandenham also who have, you know, you look at cyclists, Canadian cyclists, and there's such an incentive not to do cyclocross as your main discipline. I mean, you have the karting and the funding and everything else that you don't get to take advantage of and you were in that position. I mean, you were a professional mountain biker who basically gave it up for cyclocross, and that must have been a really tough decision. I think more so than what we see in the US, where it's just like, I'm changing disciplines. You're really leaving more of a government sponsored career track just for going off on your own.
Yeah, totally. But that's like, and that's one thing that I want to tell people in Canada. And that it is possible to make a career out of cyclocross. I actually make more money racing cyclocross on my own than I did racing mountain bike and having the karting and being like on a pro team. So like it is possible. Like you can have a really good living and you can have success. And now we have some help from Scott, basically, but from Scott's program. So like that's the one thing that's important for me to tell other people. Like if you're passionate by this, there is a way to make it a career. And yeah, that's why like the whole CX fever has been going to Cycling Canada in the past year, because like I want to tell them like, well, it's mostly I know that there's no funding, so if I can help a little bit that way, I'm happy to do so, because yeah, it's a really cool sport, and if that's the one you prefer, you're going to do better. Like I love mountain biking. I love riding my mountain bike and I love like stage racing and stuff, but I'm maybe not as attached to cross country Olympic racing as I am to cyclocross, and therefore I'm really not as good. And it's really just like a love thing. I think I'm able to push harder in cyclocross because I love it more, and so I have more success. So if people are in the same situation, like I want them to know that it's possible to have a career out of that.
Yeah. And just for people who are wondering who this Scott guy is, we keep talking about it. Scott Kelly, who's the among his many hats he wears is the cycling manager for Canada. But you can go listen to episode 189 and learn all about Scott Kelly.
Look at that. Bill knows the number. Wow. That's impressive. Bill, like just out of nowhere, Bill, that we've been working on this with him, being up on which episode we're on.
Speaking of mentoring, I mean, you have turned this around and you mentioned it, you are doing CX Fever, and that is providing you're providing grants to Canadian cycling. But like, can you talk a little bit about what CX Fever is and what that goes?
Yeah, sure. I mean, at its core, the fever is just my passion for the sport, because I feel like it's more than just passion. It's like contagious. It's in my, you feel in my belly. It's bigger. It's like a fever, you know. Shouldn't even say that in a COVID situation, but whatever. It was, the name was invented before anything pandemic happened. But yeah, so at its core, that's what it was. And then eventually I decided to make socks and t-shirts and stuff to just share the fever. But I realized that I was making money out of selling those things. So I decided to give that money to help the younger generation to follow their passion. So it had like a few different, every year it was something different, but last year was the biggest. We gave $5,000 to Cyclocross Canada. And as I said, like Cyclocross Canada is volunteer based 100%. And the money went all like 100% to help diminish the cost of the juniors going to Europe. So it's, I mean, I could have given grants to individual riders, but I felt like this was the way to help as many riders as possible. Yeah, so it's been fun to do. I wish I could do more, honestly. I wish I could like get involved with my time and share more. But for now, that's what I can afford. So yeah, it's been really fun to do. It's fun to see, as I said, like it's motivating to see kids coming up in the sport and being so motivated. So it's pretty cool. And this year I sold some photo books. So my hobbies is to take pictures. And so I made a book, cyclocross book, and I sold those to make money for the CX Fever Fund.
Once you retire, she's going to be in the pit with us. We're going to be out there.
I know. I was like,
I would love that. I have work to do, though.
I was going to say either that or she's like conspiring to put us out of business. I don't know. And woman of many talents here.
Sorry.
Well, I never said my pictures were beautiful. I just said I love taking them.
I don't know. We've been seeing those action shots of that new puppy. So, you know.
Yeah, I'm practicing.
Well, yeah. Speaking of, you know, wanting to share, you've been doing your your sort of online training camp, your weekly cyclocross videos, and those have been great. I mean, tell us about like what inspired that and what they are and just why you decided to do it.
Yeah, pretty simple. Every Wednesday, every week, I share a cyclocross skills that you can practice at home. And I mean, it all started in the COVID thing. Like, our situation with, like, my team situation is that with my boyfriend, David, we run our own team. So we gather a few different partners and we try to represent them by doing some races. But with no races happening, you have to find a way to stay relevant to them and still bring, stay relevant to them, but also to the cyclocross community. And with, so we decided that we would share some cyclocross skills videos to help people keep practicing for cyclocross, even though there's no races. So sometimes motivation can be hard in a summer like this summer when there's no tangible goals. But I feel like one way to stay motivated is to keep practicing on stuff that are never going to be lost. And like technical skills is one of those things that it keeps you engaged in cyclocross. Like you keep want to be part of it. You keep want to practicing. You feel good because you're improving. It's little things. Like it doesn't need a ton of work and you can gain so much time and so much confidence on your bike. So we thought this could be a fun thing to share with people. So we've done one every week that was associated with a different partner. And it's been cool. A lot of people have told me that they are doing it. So there's four more coming. but yeah, it's been cool. I mean, it's stuff that we practice on a weekly basis and I just thought it'd be fun to share with. Yeah.
Any video on posting up and victory celebrations?
I was going to ask about that.
No, not on that one.
Come on, you got it. You have to show people how to do the power slide, how to throw up those kids, you know. Come true. On.
Yes.
How to choose a perfect podium hat?
Yeah, podium hat. That's true.
Like how did you feel that watched your instructional video on how to post up?
Oh, I know. Well, you know what's funny? One time we were doing a autograph signing at SRAM one year at Waterloo, and I was sitting next to Wout, and I had those like tiny cyclocross fever pins that you could put on your shirt, and they were on the table, and he's sitting next to me, and he's like, oh, can I have one? I have CX fever. And I'm sure, yeah. I was like, of course you can have one. He's like, yeah. And he put it on. And he's like, yeah, I have CX fever. So, yeah. That's amazing. I think that's where that
He didn't steal it. It's more of an homage.
Exactly. You know. Exactly.
That's awesome.
I wasn't saying that he stole it, but I think it's pretty clear where he learned that.
Oh, and, for sure.
You know, maybe it was a sign to all of us cross fans. You know, just like, hey, just so you know,
I still have the fever.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's great, Magley. We've spoken to a bunch of riders, and you know, Kerry Warner last week. You know, he's got his vlog, and just the ways of in which you can provide value for your sponsors. So I was watching your, you know, your training videos and you were incorporating the sponsors in it. And I was like, you know, you're on it. And that's gotta be such a great tool for you. It's also gotta be such a good like marketing tool for the future. It's just like, look, like I can produce these pieces. I mean, would you recommend, like, is this something you think that all riders should be doing, or should they be looking beyond just sort of like, you know, their own skills and results, but sort of just now these days, like, how do you present yourself to the world?
Yes and no. I think, I guess a few things popped to my mind with that. One thing is I believe in sharing. I think even with our competitors, I think we all learn by sharing. So I'm not shy. I don't think training is any kind of secret. So I'm happy to be sharing. And then if I share, maybe someone else will be open to share with me. And then we both learn and we both get better. So that's one thing, like one of the philosophy that David and I have. But on the sponsor thing, I mean, yes, like it was, I mean, this year it was a challenge for everyone to still do something relevant. And one of the things that we did is that in Quebec, we've been allowed to do events of like 100 people outside. So we're lucky that it's pretty open here. Like everything's open. We have to wear masks, but outside, like a lot of events are happening. There's some bike races happening. So it was okay to do some group rides. And so we organized a few group rides, and we made it like COVID proof in a sense that everyone was riding in like small groups with their friends, like 4 to 6 people. And we just left by intervals, but we mapped the route for everyone. And we had a feed station. My mom was driving to the feed station, and we had a tent, and we had cliff bars for everyone. And we had like water and just stuff like that. And I have a beer sponsor, so at the end we couldn't provide food for everyone, but we had beer, and so people could like drink their beer. So it was COVID proof, but still a way to like again connect with the community. I'm never home, like I don't even know the people who ride at home, but this allowed me to get to know them a little bit more. And so that was like one way for us to do it. There was the videos, a few other things that we did, like specifically with other sponsors. But I do think it's important. Like these days, being a professional athlete is not just about having results. You have to bring some kind of return. And it's not either just social media. Like that's not enough anymore. So you have to find ways to actually give a return. And I don't know what those ways are, but I think it's an integral part of having a career. Like if you don't have the financial support and the like equipment support and all of that, you just can't compete. So it's as important as the training. Like maybe not, like it's just a little bit less important, but very much important. So it's just part of the job. And so you have to find ways to like make yourself valuable. And an easy way to do that is just to ask the sponsor, like, what is it that you want? Like, what's your goal and how can I help you to achieve it? It's as simple as that. And then you can like build a plan with that people, with those people. So, I mean, I think it's easy to say like, there's no more teams, it's too hard and this and that, but like, there's ways to make it happen. A lot of people are doing it. And so, yeah, I mean, if you want to be a professional cyclocross athlete, like unfortunately or fortunately, because personally I like it, but you have to like take care of the business side of it, I think.
You actually touched on something I wanted to ask you about there, that dealing with teams. Is this third year of your program?
Yeah, we're starting third year.
Yeah, and it's just you and David. You've seen, I mean, you talked to Katie and Mark, you've seen what they've done and how they built their program. You know, you came from a professional team that in your tenure there went from a ton of people to the medium-sized team to, you know, just sort of fluctuated back and forth. And you've seen other programs out there, what Powers has done, what other people have done. Is there a bigger plan here to say, okay, we're going to build this out, we're going to take on someone else or more riders? Or as you mentioned, there aren't any teams anymore, as that day just passed and it's pretty much just everybody for themselves these days?
It's a really good question. I ask myself that question a lot. Sometimes I would love to have someone else on the team for many reasons. Like it's really cool to have a teammate, and there's values, like some sponsors want to have more people. At the same time, for us right now, we just don't have enough resources to bring someone else on board. We could have equipment for someone else, but if I wanted to offer like good support to someone else, it just basically doubles all the costs, because for now I'm with my boyfriend and it's only the two of us. So it's only like one hotel room and one car and one this and one that. But if I bring someone else, it's just one more person, but it's double everything. So right now I wouldn't have the resources to do that, but I'm not saying no though. Like who knows what happens. And if I end up having a big sponsor that really wants someone else, or just one rider that could possibly like bring something to our program and we could like collaborate on that, totally, I'm not against it. But right now it's just not feasible. So, but yeah, who knows? Maybe in the next few years, or maybe when I retire, I want to run a team. Who knows? I don't know. But never say never.
Yeah. And it really, I mean, we talk about it a lot, just how the whole landscape, especially in North America, has changed. And I mean, even in Europe to an extent, where it's down to, I mean, what is it, like one set of brothers owns 90% of the teams now for cyclocross. They just keep switching from each of their own teams. So yeah, it's definitely a hustle. And I think that's kind of the thing too, that, you know, you talk about all the skills that you've improved on just in riding your bike. I mean, just standing up a business on your own. I mean, that's tough. You know, it's tough, but it's also part of being a professional cyclist, especially in cyclocross these days, where you gotta, if you're not a good business person, you're not going to succeed. You know, you can't just do the racing. It's sort of the whole package.
No, totally. Yeah. And there's like positive. I mean, like there's one thing I have to say. I'm lucky because I'm not alone. Like David does a lot of it with me. So we work together on that. But also I think there's two ways to look at it. Like we can look at it like a bummer, I have to take care of all of that. But also like it creates so many good opportunities for projects or for like getting introduced to other companies from like one of the companies you work with, or even like just simply life skills. Like you learn other things in your bike career than just pedaling, which is cool. Like for me, that's super stimulating. And there's some like bunch of stuff that I don't know how to do and I struggle with, but like little by little you learn, and then you're like, cool, like the day I'll retire, at least I know how to do like these other skills that are maybe more helpful in a non-cycling world, if I can say.
And I think what you have going for you as well is that you enjoy doing a lot of these other things, like the newsletters that you do. I mean, that's amazing. Oh, and yeah. that is something that I know personally for a lot of athletes, it is literally like pulling teeth to get them to sit down and express themselves and write out their thoughts. I mean, Zach can tell you about that, dealing with Cyclocross Magazine for so many years, but you seem to embrace it. And, you know, you want to, and you were so good about getting that out like post race all the time. And it's got to be such a big asset for your sponsors, but I'm assuming it's also something that you enjoy doing. At least it seemed like it did in the writing.
Sure. I enjoy it. I mean, sometimes like you don't want to do it for sure. It's like anything. Sometimes like the race finishes late and you're like, crap, I have to write this thing. Or like, and especially if it didn't go well, you're like, what am I going to say? But I mean, for me, like I kind of like writing, and it's also like a tool to kind of remind me of what the race was about and like think back on the race and see like what I can learn from it. So that was a good tool for me to do that. But also like it doesn't need to be that for other people. Like they can pick what they like to do and find a creative idea that like around that. So I don't think it necessarily needs to be that, but I just think everyone can find something that they enjoy and try to create something original out of that.
Yeah, that's a really good thought, Magli. Like, let you know, find your other passion and incorporate that into how you sort of interact with your fans or provide value for the sponsors. I just want to say that I loved your newsletters. I was always impressed like how quickly they came out, and then B, just the breadth of information, and they were super fun. So I just like, I know sometimes you put stuff out in the world and you never know.
You wonder,
right? So I want to let you know that I enjoyed them. So they were great. So,
well, I appreciate it. Thank you. It's, you know, it's like the skills video. I thought like sometimes when I sit down to like create it, I'm like, no one's watching it. But then like, then I see a kid in the street and he's like, oh, I've been practicing. It's so cool. I'm like, okay, well then it's worth it. So yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
We're all very in tune with producing things that nobody watches.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you think no one watches, but then like a lot of people watch.
No, I mean, that's the thing. I think, you know, it's like we're constantly looking at things and taking in content all day long. And it's like, you see something that's good, you're like, cool. And like, you just move past it. You see something that's bad, you might actually say something, but like, then you're true. I should probably take the time, if I really like something, to comment or to like, to show someone that I do like it, because you realize that when someone does it to you, it means a lot and it just helps, right? And so, yeah.
No, you're right. Good point.
All right. Magli, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. That was super fun, guys. Now I'm so even more excited for Cyclocross. Well,
I was going to say that we're going to have to do this again soon.
Yes.
When we can get into the weeds about some racing. That is
sure.
That's the goal.
I mean, anytime. I'm not that busy, so anytime.
Awesome. Well, Magley, one last question. I noticed that your book is sold out. Are you doing another run? Can people get more of those?
Yeah, more are coming.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I just didn't know if any would sell, so I didn't make that many first. I think I made 65, but there's more coming, so yeah.
Awesome.
Hey, fans and loyal listeners of the Wide Angle Podium. It's Rob Kelly, the host of No Training Wheels. Please join me and the rest of the Criterium Nation as we explore the best that domestic road racing has to offer. In each episode, we meet and hear from the racers, teams, promoters, and people that make the American road scene exciting and engaging, and go beyond the results to talk about the how and why of racing that fascinates us all. So subscribe to No Training Wheels anywhere you get your podcasts. For a full archive of episodes, please visit our website, No Training Wheels Pod, or follow us on Twitter at NT Wheels Pod, or on Instagram at No Training Wheels Pod.